Thank you for tuning in to this podcast episode of CSR Radio. My name is Yvonne Harris, and I'm excited to spend some time today with Jenny Kim. I actually had the pleasure of meeting Jenny at the National Diversity Conference that was held in April in Dallas. So, Jenny, great pleasure to meet you then. So glad that you're here today. Recording this podcast with me. Can you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Of course. And first of all, Yvonne, thank you so much to the National Diversity Council for having us at the panel back in April, but also for this podcast as well. Again, for our listeners, my name is Jenny Kim, and I have the honor and privilege of serving as Deputy General Counsel and Vice President of Public Policy at Koch Industries. And there I oversee compliance, but I also focus on the key issue of criminal justice reform, about removing barriers to opportunity for all and providing second chances so that people can share in the prosperity of their communities and stay together with their families and also become lifelong learners. But in addition to that, I am also a board member for the Due Process Institute, which is the lobbyist for the Constitution, as they like to call themselves. I am also on the Advisory Council for Safe Streets and Second Chances, which is one of Koch Industries' initiatives, which we will speak about a little bit later. And then finally, last but not least, I am on the board of Public Leadership Education Network, which is an organization focused on educating young college women about public and private sector careers in public policy, which is really, really important.
Jenny, you have a lot going on, and I know that about you. So hopefully we'll get to touch on some of those board appointments that you have. But let's start just with the concept of criminal justice reform. That's been in the news a lot this year. And what happened with this issue in Congress, and what does it mean going forward?
So it was a fabulous thing that happened in Congress when the First Step Act finally passed and then was signed by the president just before the holidays, and thankfully, just before the government shutdown. And what this brings to culmination is all the criminal justice reform that had been going on in the states, from prison reform to reentry reform to rehabilitation reform, sentencing reform, due process reform. It culminated at the federal level after 10 years of efforts by so many groups, such as Cut 50 by Van Jones and now Reform Alliance, by all the conservative groups, by Koch Industries, and it kind of came together to make sure that at the federal level, the 200,000-plus federal inmates have the opportunity to receive diagnosis on their risk assessments, get in-prison education, rehabilitation, assessments, so that they could figure out how to have the best reentry coming back out, because most of those folks are coming back to our communities. I think one stat that people would be shocked to know is that 95% of those in prison are eventually coming back to our communities. Mm-hmm. And right now in the United States, there's a total of about 2.2 million in prison, which means around each year, 700,000 come out from the prisons, and they're coming back. They're coming back into our communities, and it is best served for them and best served for us as well if they're educated and rehabilitated in the prisons and then can come out and reintegrate back successfully. So what Congress did with the First Step Act was a huge step forward, but it's only the first step, and hence why it's called the First Step Act. There's a lot of other stuff going on in Congress right now, hopefully with things that will change the front part of the system, whether it's the right to counsel, prosecutorial discretion, more sentencing reform. And so this is the positive thing that's happening right now. And in fact, in a couple of weeks, I believe, about 2,200 people will be coming out of federal prisons thanks to the sentencing reforms of the First Step Act, and already over 1,000 have come out. And one of those people who you probably have been seeing in the news a lot is Matthew Charles.
Right. Well, and Jenny, when you infuse the numbers in the conversation, you really start to understand the power of this movement, of this effort, and how many lives it's impacting. Let me ask you, though, quickly, how did Koch Industries get involved?
So we went through a rough situation with the government in the 90s, and then, you know, we asked ourselves, if a company with us with this many resources goes through this, what does the average American face? And so we started out by looking at the criminal code at the federal level and realized, oh my God, there's more than 5,000 criminal laws, federal criminal laws, but nobody wants to count them, so we're not really sure. And then right now, there's probably around 300,000 federal criminal regulations. And actually, Yvonne, there is a great Twitter handle called Crime A Day that tweets out one federal crime a day. And this person has been tweeting it out for the last 5 years.
And,
and he has about 785 more years to go.
And Jenny, it's and Crime A Day?
Yes.
Is that the handle, Crime A Day?
Yes, Crime A Day.
Thank you.
And he also recently published a book called How to Become a Federal Criminal, which is a lovely illustrated handbook. I would not recommend trying any of that in that book, but it's a good illustration of how many crimes we have created, how many absurd crimes we have created, and how much prosecutorial power there actually is. And so we looked at that, but then we realized, like a diet and exercise program, you can't just eliminate all the fats or all the sugars to get everything sort of back to its proper place. You have to look at the whole system. And that's how we got involved in looking at the collateral consequences, reentry, sentencing reform, materiality reform, prosecutorial discretion, as well as the entire criminal code as well. And that's how we got involved, not just the federal, but then looked back to the states too, because if you think about it, there's a cascading effect, right? There's this many federal criminal laws. Each state has at least 1,800 state criminal laws. And then you layer on top of that local criminal ordinances. Because, Yvonne, at the end of the day, we have started criminalizing everything because we're mad at our neighbors. We're mad at someone else. We don't like someone. And so instead of really thinking about reserving the criminal law and the penalties just for people that we are genuinely afraid of, we've passed it to go after everyone we're mad at, too. And that massive expansion has in turn affected people and their driver's licenses. So if you don't pay your fines and fees, then your driver license gets suspended. Well, if your driver license gets suspended, you don't have transportation. And if you don't have transportation, it's very hard to keep up a job. And if you don't pay your fines and fees and you're driving on your suspended license and you get caught by the police, then boom, right there you go into jail. And that cycle is what we have created. And that's what we discovered with that one experience that we had in the 90s. And so that's why we are very committed to removing barriers to opportunity, because otherwise people cannot reach their full potential if we put this many barriers.
Okay, so when we think beyond the barriers, let's just break it down for the audience. Jenny, what do we exactly mean when we talk about second chance hiring, and why is this so relevant today? So what's the book definition or the workable definition of second chance hiring?
That's a great question, Yvonne, because I think there's probably no book definition of it that we could cite to in the Webster's Dictionary. However, I would say this is the working definition of second chance hiring. First, we have to start with the proposition that everyone wants to be safe. Right? Safety emotionally, safety physically, within our families, within our networks and our communities. And a lot of that starts with a job and a career and being able to envision a bigger life and a bigger career and more sort of upward mobility. And that's what people envision. And that's what really second chance hiring is about. Because for most of the folks who unfortunately have a disclaimer after their name, they never got that first chance. And so second chance hiring is really providing people with criminal records an opportunity to create and sustain their zones of safety and vision through a job and a career. And it's relevant today because with the labor shortages and everything else, we as businesses, together with nonprofits and the government, we have an opportunity to make that dream come true for a lot of folks, as well as keep our skills and be competitive on the global market. We can remove those barriers that hinder people with criminal records from achieving their fullest potential and from being able to realize their dreams and also being able to achieve their idea of safety. And in turn, that makes us safer and also lowers the recidivism rate, because going back to prison is not the solution for any of these folks.
Well, as you know, this podcast has been started to really educate around topics of corporate and social responsibility. So help us find the connective tissue. How does second chance hiring tie to CSR or corporate social responsibility?
So this is how Koch Industries thinks about corporate social responsibility. We think about the role of businesses helping people improve their lives. They're providing products and services that they would value more highly than any alternatives, and doing so responsibly while consuming fewer resources. And we at Koch Industries sort of think about the long-term value creation based on mutually benefiting each other, right? Where we benefit by creating value for our customers, our vendors, our employees, our communities, anyone we really interact with. And through that, second chance hiring connects to the corporate social responsibility piece, because we are really focused on hiring and retaining talent, regardless of any disclaimers, and truly providing opportunities for talent to learn and to thrive at work, be together with their families, and contribute to their communities. Our recent Society for Human Resource Management and Charles Koch Institute poll determined that actually more than 75% of consumers would support businesses who hire and retain people with criminal records. And we will also benefit because, for example, I think we also often assume that people with criminal records don't have the skills or talents. They have so much untapped potential, and they have so much loyalty, and they're so committed to providing for their communities and to the businesses. And actually, whatever they learned on the streets, whatever they learned in prison, how to survive, how to think about things, how to market, how to distribute, those are skills that can be transferable to the corporate setting. And we really need to think about talent not in boxes, but how we can weave those together. And that is why second chance hiring is a huge part of the corporate social responsibility piece.
So what specifically is Koch doing to be a change agent for second chance hiring? What are some of the tactics that we see in the community that are being driven by Koch?
So there are probably seven big things that we are actually doing. So okay. The first thing that I had the chance to talk about a little bit last April with respect to the National Diversity Council's annual conference is that we have partnered with the Society for Human Resource Management on the Getting Talent Back to Work Pledge and Toolkit. What that means is that businesses sign up to the pledge to commit to consider hiring and retaining people with criminal records. And if you are a business who is interested in doing this, but you have never done it before, then there is this toolkit that walks you through how to do it successfully, what the pitfalls may be, what you need to think about, how do you address it sensitively. And then there so far has been more than 1,000 organizations since the launch in January. Organizations, trade associations, corporations have signed onto this pledge. And this really came together after the First Step Act passed and got signed by President Trump. Because what's the next step for these folks, right? Once they come out, we really need to make sure that they feel that they're part of our community, that we are as inclusive as possible. And so this is sort of helping companies who've never done it before get it right, but also the companies who are more experienced be part of that ecosystem so they can provide guidance and also learn from each other and have that feedback loop also feed back into the policy work so that we can do as much as we can legislatively as well as from an executive branch perspective to make sure that as many barriers are removed as possible. So that's the first thing with SHRM. The second thing is we are at Koch Industries are educating our supply chain about the SHRM pledge and toolkit. And we have also, with SHRM, worked with the U.S. Chamber Foundation on educating all of the U.S. Chambers members about why hiring people with criminal records and retaining them makes sense. And recently, the U.S. Chamber Foundation just launched their magazine, as well as their website, that highlights various different programs and businesses and corrections agents and departments that do this really well, which is partner with businesses to bring in-house, in-prison education programs so that folks are work-ready when they come out of prison and are ready to reintegrate back into their communities. The third thing is we have been focused on pro bono. We have a number of lawyers and paralegals who are very committed to doing good and providing services for their community. And so last year, we worked with various organizations, including the Association for Corporate Counsel and various different Kansas-based chambers of commerce to change the bar rules to allow in-house counsel to actually provide pro bono counsel to underserved communities. And where we've had the most success is with expungements. Expungements are very hard to get. And basically what an expungement is that after a certain period of time, if you've been convicted or charged of something, you can finally apply legally through the courts to get rid of your criminal record completely so that future employers or anyone else, when they do a background check on you, they don't see that criminal record anymore. So in Kansas, we've been working on it. We're probably going to expand to Georgia. And then at the same time, we're really looking to figure out how to get driver's licenses restored for people with criminal records and kind of working with various organizations to explore those possibilities. Fourth thing, we are talking to other corporations and their pro bono divisions about sort of expanding on expungements, because then we can really have an exponential impact on that. The fifth thing is our initiative, Safe Streets and Second Chances, which is a new initiative that we launched last January that simultaneously addresses policy reforms and also enhances reentry supports. And right now we are focused in four pilot states of Florida, Kentucky, Texas, and Pennsylvania. And what would we really like is to figure out what are the best evidence-driven practices around reentry and take those and bring them to the beginning of the system, to the moment of arrest, so we can quickly have the social worker, the defense lawyer, the prosecutor, and the judge identify what that person who's arrested really needs. Because most of the time, they don't really need jail or prison, but they really need help in other ways. And then finally, last but not least, we are collaborating with the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative on Clean Slate. We worked together to get something passed in Pennsylvania. We're currently hoping, keeping fingers crossed, that North Carolina will do a similar thing, but we're really focused on trying to get more expungements, automated, because that will result in studies, a 25% increase in wages, because if you don't have a criminal record, that'll make it that much easier for the employer to employ you.
Right. Wow, that is a very comprehensive list. We could probably do a podcast on each of those seven action items.
Yes.
So we may have to do a series on this topic. But you mentioned probably at the beginning of what you were just describing, other organizations. And can you give us some insight on other organizations that are supporting this effort and other leaders, individual leaders? You're very involved as an individual, but who else is really behind this movement and helping to drive change in this area?
So first of all, the group that we are partnering with on the Getting Talent Back to Work initiative, the Society for Human Resource Management, Johnny Taylor, the CEO and president of that organization, he is also on the advisory council of Safe Streets and Second Chances with me, and our senior vice president at Cook Industries, Mark Holden, as well. And he and his staff, from Emily Dickens to Alex Alonzo to Rose Gepkin, Felix, everybody is very, very involved and committed and working with the 1,000-plus chapters that are built within CHRM. Another organization who is very involved, Yvonne, is Dave's Killer Bread Foundation. I've yet to taste the bread. I'm told the bread is just amazing. But there, Jean-Bieve Martin, it has been a major leader in this movement for over a decade. And she is also someone who's very committed. And they have also learned so much from hiring on their own people with criminal records. So they have been a huge, huge leader. The others that we recently sort of have been starting working with, Televerde, which is a business-to-business marketing and sales company. They actually have five sites in Arizona women's prisons, and they educate and train these women. And a lot of these women, when they come out, they actually get jobs with Televerde or any other businesses in Arizona with whom Televerde has partnerships. And I actually had the privilege to meet many of the women in the prison when I visited Perryville a couple of months ago. I also had my first In-N-Out burger then. Those women were amazing, and the stories they had were amazing, and the human potential waste was just awful, because most of them had reached some sort of emotional pain point. They got addicted to drugs, and that's why they were in prison. So that was truly, truly sad to hear, because there could be other alternatives when that happened to them that should not have involved prison in the first place. Another one is Fifth Third Bank, Jeff Korzenick, real leader on this. And one of the few bankers who is very outspoken about this, other than Jamie Dimon. Nehemiah Manufacturing in Cincinnati, Ohio, the CEO of that company, Dan Meyer, he is an amazing, amazing leader on this. He's kind of gathered all the different businesses in Cincinnati and had them all commit to hire people with criminal records. He also has social workers on staff, Yvonne, and they outsource their HR, but they have social workers on staff that he shares with other businesses to help them figure out the wraparound services for their employees. And they're 80% employee incarcerated. CKS Packaging in Atlanta, Georgia, they make all the bottles for our weed killers, for ice cream, for Coca-Cola, all the plastic bottles. And they are committed to second chance hiring. And they define a little bit more broadly, Yvonne, homeless people, people addicted to drugs, people with criminal records. And they are very, very focused on it. And they have about 3,200 employees across the country located in Dallas, Kansas City, North Carolina. And they actually partner with various reentry service providers and find their employees that way. And they just love it. They love their employees who are second chance hires. Butterball and Cascade Engineering in Michigan. They've been leaders since the 70s. And so they've been around a very long time. And then from a, I think, a corrections perspective, Heidi Washington, I don't know, Yvonne, if you saw some of the headlines yesterday, but DTE Energy is partnering with the Michigan Department of Corrections to get in-prison education because they desperately need employees and they need them kind of coming straight out. So that's a, another avenue as well. And she's really figured it out with the, her vocational villages. So, I mean, the list can go on and on, honestly, and that's where this whole journey has been such a privilege to speak to so many individuals who have worked with people with criminal records and have made those people's dreams come true. And in turn, those people with criminal records have had their dreams and their lives turned around. They're helping others as well. And that sort of touch point is amazing to see.
I love to hear you refer to it as a privilege. I was thinking the same thing. It's just such an impressive list and just so powerful and uplifting that so many organizations and leaders are behind this effort. And, you know, Jenny, I mean, what you're doing here today is really helping to spread the word. I don't think people truly understand how much work goes on behind the scenes, how much positive energy there is towards this effort. And basically, it's the butterfly effect, right? So every time we can talk about it, every time we can share it, every time we can spread the word, it's impacting not only the individual's life, but the life of a family, the life of a business. And this is just a very important topic that doesn't get enough airtime, in my opinion.
So Yvonne, I want to add one more thing to your point, because I think this is really important that people need to understand this, which is this, and I really want our listeners to understand this. When I started into this, I did it, I was committed to it, but I have learned so much that has made me a better person and a better supervisor and coach. And people don't think go into it thinking they will learn something from others, but you will, because your preconceptions and your assumptions and your prejudgments, they all collapse like sand.
Yep.
And you have to reform things constantly, and you're forced to reconsider everything that you have assumed thus far in your life.
And
that's pretty big.
If you're just open and suspend judgment, just a lot of learnings will come that way. Thank you for sharing that, Jenny. Quick question, and this may have just been me kind of thinking through as I was preparing for our conversation, but just wanted to ask you, is this really an old topic that has gained public attention and recognition recently, or is second chance hiring more of a new effort that's now gaining traction?
So I'm sort of going to be rhetorical about this, but are diet and exercise and fashion ever a new topic, or do we just focus on one, I think, aspect or point and kind of recycle constantly and make something new? I think it's a little bit more of that. It's been around for a long time. We've always sort of had a skills gap, a labor gap. The companies who, some of whom I've mentioned, who have hired people with criminal records for a while, they've done it consistently. It has not been a new thing for them. I think is what is new is that businesses have been forced to rethink how they assess talent, because it's not businesses choosing anymore, right? They really have to go back to the drawing board and start again in terms of trying to figure out how to find, grow, and retain talent. And every consulting report that comes out talks about how the new thing that is most important is being able to learn and relearn old skills and new skills. And right now, I'm not sure that, you know, we have that in the business world. And so we need to look at talent differently, not because they have a certification or a degree or they have a bunch of names after their name, but the person, the holistically. Mm-hmm. And that means that we have to do homework too in the business, right? We have to learn how to identify and learn to identify the unknown and be okay with it and take those risks. And so I would not say that it's a new thing. I think it's a new way of thinking about it. But this whole issue and this commitment to hiring has been in small pockets, but I think it's grown because of the labor shortage, right? We have 7.3 million jobs that are open, and our unemployment rate is all-time low. And this morning in the Wall Street Journal, I saw that unskilled labor is in high demand again too now, contrary to popular belief. So all those factors have forced businesses to really, really consider how to do this thoughtfully and how to get past their prior assumptions.
So with this new thinking and new momentum, how can second chance hiring help society as a whole?
I think two things that can help society at whole. Number one, I think businesses will be transformed by bringing in talent that has not gone through the conventional school thinking, right? We're all kind of talking about, you know, how can we get out of our boxes? How can we not put people in boxes? How can we not put skills in boxes? So it's going to be a constant, things will get transformed because of the way we view things, right? One of my favorite children's books is Amelia Bedelia, right? Amelia Bedelia, her concept of vocabulary of draw curtains or dress the chicken is very different from her employer's idea of what drawing the curtains and dressing the chicken is. And so we need to kind of, as supervisors and coaches, as businesses, we need to bring that view and try to see things through the employee's eyes, the potential employee's eyes, and allow those sort of kind of transformations and experiments to happen at the business level. That's the first thing. And I think the second thing, individually for each of the supervisors, it's going to transform you, as we discussed earlier in this podcast, about how you take all your assumptions about life and communities and families, and it's all going to be upended, and it's okay. That's part of change and transformation, and you learn something new, and then you can suspend judgment, and then you can open your heart and your mind to this. And this is really important. I think businesses and the people who run the businesses, this is really important to open the heart and mind to the different possibilities instead of constantly thinking, well, this is what used to fit. Don't think about what used to fit. Right. Think about what can be. And I know that's a different way of viewing things, but that's kind of the way this is going to change business as a whole. As a society as a whole, it's going to be the trickle-down effect, right? Because if we have happy employees, we have employees with lots of potential, it'll make positive things, contributions to our communities, to their families, and then hopefully it'll break that intergenerational poverty as well.
I love it. I love it. So, call to action, Jenny, for those who are listening to this podcast episode, what can businesses and what can individuals do to contribute to second chance hiring?
So for businesses, if you're genuinely interested and you've never done it before, start with one employee. And I'm happy to be contacted to help you out with that. If your HR representatives are members of SHRM, then reach out to SHRM and your local chapter, and they would be happy to help you with that too. Also remember to not do it alone. There are plenty of businesses who have done it before, and as I had mentioned before in this podcast, there is an ecosystem of businesses who would be more than happy to help you. I know, like, for example, Dan Meyer of Nehemiah Manufacturing, he will drop anything and everything to help other businesses hire people with criminal records and how to do it successfully. And then, you know, figure out who good reentry providers and partners are. That's going to be very important as well. And be open and transparent with your employees if you've never done this before, right? There will be people with judgments and there will be people with doubts, but to ask them to keep an open mind. They don't have to agree with everything, right? None of us agree with each other on everything. I can tell you that because I argue with my dad all day long. But we can agree to give everybody a chance. And frankly, we are all in this world because someone gave us a chance,
absolutely,
a second chance, a third chance, and a fourth chance.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the thing to remember. As individuals, go visit a prison. Go visit a prison,
okay,
and meet some of the inmates there and just listen. Don't listen to respond. Don't listen to judge. Just listen to hear. Just listen. And then also meet people who have had a criminal record and listen to them too. And think about how you can suspend your judgment and how you can make your business, think about opportunities here too and where you can make those contributions. But I think the first step for individuals is just to go visit a prison, listen to their stories, and you're going to come to realize this easily can be you as well.
Jenny, it is always such a pleasure to talk to you and just so uplifting. I love and can truly appreciate your passion around this topic. You've truly inspired me. I know for others who are listening, you have done the same. So thank you so much for your time. I hope that we can record again soon. I have a feeling,
absolutely,
that there's so much momentum around this. There'll probably be some great positive updates that you could report out in just a matter of months. So please come back and join us.
Thank you. I would love that opportunity. And Yvonne, thank you so much for this opportunity and privilege to be able to speak to this work. And we will need everyone, all the listeners, all the people who aren't listening, the listeners, your friends, your family. We need everyone in this effort because divided we stand. I mean, divided we fall, united we stand. And that's really important.
Thank you again, Jenny, and thanks to our listeners.
Thank you.